This is the second interview with Ernestine Hera Kettler. The interview began with a discussion of her political involvement in New York and her earlier life there. She discussed schooling, her family life, and her involvement at an early age with the radical movement. The second half of the interview details her suffrage experience. She went to Washington following meeting a Catherine Hodgins at a socialist meeting in New York. Shortly after her arrival there, she became involved in picketing and after a few days was arrested. She relates her prison experience. It is her contention that it was her group of four pickets, which she insisted included Peggy Johns, that decided to bring up and push the issue of their being political prisoners. Their decision was that they were political prisoners and they owed no work, therefore. The work refusal was accepted by the other women already at the Occoquan workhouse, and she describes their continued refusal to work for 26 days. There was an incident that took place at the prison as a result of the protest by the women there of the attempted removal by the authorities of Peggy John to the psychopathic ward. This led to an attack by black women deputies on the prisoners. Following this, all of the prisoners were returned to the city jail and held there for a few days and released directly from the jail. Almost immediately after these experiences, she returned to New York and eventually, very shortly after that, went to Washington.
Yes, you came to this country in 1905, somewhere in through there.
1907.
And between, now when your father was already dead at that point, right?
Yeah, he was dead. He died in Romania.
And so your mother came with
four children.
Mm-hmm. Now how did the family support itself during those years? Do you remember?
Well, so far as I recollect, there was some help from relatives. We had a number of relatives in New York. And then my mother got a job, a sweatshop job. And she had to bring the work home in order to take care of us. And that's how we lived, as a matter of fact. I don't know any other way. We had a... There was a distant cousin who fell in love with my mother. So he used to come and visit us and bring a whole package of food. And we just loved him because of the food.
So your mother...
After all, we were hungry. So, and my mother, you know, she was very much attached to my father and she couldn't see anyone else. As a matter of fact, there was a young man in Romania who wanted to marry my mother, and she couldn't do it, you know. She just felt too attached to my father, you know, and it just continued for the rest of her life.
So
which I think was foolish. I think she should have married this young man, but on the other hand, what would have happened to us during the communist regime? Because we were bound, you know, I was bound to become political. I just couldn't escape that. Because from childhood, you know, it's, you know, from my earliest recollection, I ran around with two or three girls, and all of us were political.
That was in the United States.
Yes, in the United States, and we used to go to the Socialist Party around the corner and visit there and talk there, and we didn't join it. I don't know whether we were too young or just weren't interested. But we were interested in going there anyway, and that was part of my political education, as it formed a more immediate need than the anarchism in which I was raised. Mm-hmm. because both my father anyway was an anarchist, and my mother was whatever my father was, you know. That happens quite often in this world, aside from the feminist liberation movement.
So your mother essentially was supporting the four of you, she and the four children. Did any of the children...
Oh, incidentally, my younger brother, through the efforts of or persuasion of the cousins and the relatives in New York, was put in an orphan asylum. That was the saddest thing that ever happened, because it just used to break my heart whenever we'd go to visit him, and he'd look at us with tears in his eyes when we left, you know. And I've never been able to forget that. I was quite young then.
It was because there was no one to take care of him while she was working, is that it?
Well, no, she couldn't afford to feed him. You know, feeding 4 mouths was quite a bit. My older brother didn't stay very long in the United States. He went back to Romania, and he served in the army there, and after his service he returned to the United States. But then he was already an adult by that time.
How old were you when he went back to Romania then?
How old were
you? Were you when he went back to Romania?
Oh, I don't remember. The point is that I really don't remember him in the first years that we came to this country. I just can't seem to remember him. And I think the reason is that he didn't stay long, you know, that he must have returned almost immediately. Mm-hmm.
I see. And then the other brother was younger than you too?
Oh, yes. He was about 2.5 years younger.
So just you and the one brother then essentially were home?
No, just me. The brother that was, during the time that my younger brother was in the orphan asylum, just the two girls were home. Just my sister and I were home. And we were going to school, so of course my mother had to feed us. And the first job that I had, I must have been about 16, and I worked in the same shop where my mother worked. I think she was working on hats. And that was my first, to tell you the truth, my only organizing campaign. The girls were complaining this, and I told them, well, why don't you join the union? If you joined the union, you'd get certain conditions. Well, I must have said that at least once too often, because either the owner or the forewoman talked to me and said, you know, we can't have that sort of talk around here, and I'm sorry, but I don't think we can keep you. So that was the end of my factory work. In fact, that was the only factory work I ever did in my life.
Now, was that, you did that, you quit going to school then and worked in the
factory? Oh, that was during the summer.
During the summer?
No, that was during the summer vacation.
So all the children, though, went to high school?
Well, I went to 1 year to high school and 3 years to private academies.
I was
the talented one in the family, so I was sponsored by a millionaire.
Now, where'd he come from?
Where did he come from? From Massachusetts. Let's see, it was a single tax colony.
How did he find you or decide to do that?
I used to go to the labor temple in New York. That's where all the girls and boys who wanted club experience and different types of work, you know, crafts work, would go. And I think that we also had a Girl Scouts, and I belonged to that. And it was administered by the Labor Temple. The Labor Temple was very famous in history, incidentally, in New York City. You didn't know that, did you?
Well,
you never heard of the Labor Temple in New York?
I know generally about them in all the cities.
Well, the Labor Temple in New York was especially noteworthy because it tried to make Christians out of us, but it didn't succeed. And it was through a Greek woman, and I cannot remember her last name, Alexandrakis or something, some similar Greek name, was extremely interested in me, and she had got hold of this family Fisk Warren and his wife, who lived in, I can't remember the name of the village in Massachusetts. They had a home also in Boston. And through them I was sent to a school in... See, my memory is very bad. The Providence, is there a Providence in
Rhode Island?
Massachusetts? No, I know there's a Providence in Rhode Island.
It was in Massachusetts, though, the school?
It was in Massachusetts.
And you lived at the school then?
I lived at the school, and this was a school where foreigners mostly were sent to be given a Christian education, to be given education in the hopes of making missionaries out of them. I was there about a year and a half or 2 years,
But it was like at the high school level?
High school, yeah, an academy is at high school level. And from there, the third year I went to Oberlin, Ohio, also the academy. And so far as I remember, I think I graduated from there. I don't remember the graduation. I don't even know if I completed my high school, because I tried to get into Madison, Wisconsin with my credits, and they weren't adequate. There were 4 years on two or three subjects, English and literature, and maybe 3 years on another subject, and they just couldn't accept me. I could go as a special student. I couldn't even go as a special student, incidentally. So I just gave it up. About that time I got married, so that was the end of my education.
Well, that's true. How did you react to all that when you were involved with radicals up before that?
Well, you see, the thing is that I never quit the radical movement. Wherever I went, there were radicals, you know. Socialists, anarchists,
At this academy?
At the school. I don't remember. I don't really remember.
So when
I maintained my views, my political views, and I probably discussed them with others, but then I don't recall any adverse reactions from them.
Now, you went back to New York during the summer, though, or you were there during the school year?
Well, I went back to New York during the summer, mm-hmm. Yeah. Back to my mother, you know. And
the idea was to make a Christian missionary out of you?
Well, they tried to make a Christian out of me, but they couldn't even make me religious in any sense of the word, because I was raised without it, and it had become a philosophic question with me, not even a problem, just an interest that I had in it philosophically, because I wondered why people felt the need of a religious crutch. I just couldn't understand. It seemed to me that if they had a political conviction of some kind, that would be just as good, be just as effective as a religious one, and far more logical. But, I mean, as I show you, as I'm trying to show you, it was a philosophic question. They didn't make me either a Christian or a religious. This is, it just has never happened.
How did your mother react to you going to this place?
Well, my mother was happy that I was going to school. Or going to that school, I don't think she realized any more than I realized what it was. And what they tried to do with me. And perhaps it was just as well, because the only thing I had to do, I had to go to church every Sunday. So I picked the Unitarian Church, or some similar church. I think it was in existence then. And I used to read a book while... I picked one of the most tolerant of all the churches, you know. And read while the service was going on. It was really funny, you know. I mean, there's certain humor attached to some of the things I did, but I didn't think it was humorous then. Like, looking back over it, you know, I recall a number of things that I did, that seemed practical at the moment, but were very humorous in retrospect.
Do you recall anything about, before you went to that school, what were the living conditions like where you were, the kind of, were you living in crowded tenements, your mother and your...
Oh, sister? Yes, we lived in two rooms. One was the kitchen and the other was the bedroom. So that was quite crowded, you know. And it must have been pretty bad when the four of us were home. Except that I went to school. I was in school during that period. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't home. Mm-hmm. And that is why certain things that happened I didn't see them. I didn't know anything about them. I learned about them long afterwards from my sister, because she was still home. She was the youngest of the four of us. She stayed home the longest. And when I started leaving home to go to school, I gained a certain kind of freedom that I liked very much, you know. So I wasn't too anxious to return home.
Now, was it in the Jewish ghetto that you lived?
No. No, it wasn't a Jewish ghetto. And in fact, I don't remember that there were... I've never understood ghettos and had a feeling of living in a ghetto. But we lived in a poor neighborhood, and there were Spanish-speaking people there, there were Italians, there were all kinds of Gentiles and Jews living in the same district.
So your mother, there wasn't a close...
And you see, and we were Spanish Jews, mm-hmm. too. My mother learned whatever Yiddish she knew she learned in this country. I never learned it because I never liked the language. But my sister learned a few words so she could carry on some conversation. And as to my brothers, I don't think they liked the language either. We were anti-Semitic in that regard, you know. Some people even called us anti-Semitic. I said, what do you mean anti-Semitic? We were Spanish Jews. We just simply don't know the language. And we can refuse to learn certain languages if we don't like the sound of them. But it did teach me a number of words, because when I went to Madison, Wisconsin, to university there, I decided to take German as a language course, and it helped very much because I knew a number of the words to pronounce differently, and so I really took it out of sheer laziness to learn a completely strange language. I don't know why I didn't take Spanish, because that would have been much easier for me. That's much more like Romanian.
It's like Romanian, yeah.
Yes.
Now, was your mother still political at that time?
Oh, yes. My mother was always an anarchist.
Did she have ties to the anarchist community while you were living in New York?
No, she wasn't. She wasn't active at all. And the only activity I had was my friends, you know. Through my friends, we did a number of things. If there was a strike on, we joined the strike. If they had meetings on Union Square, we joined the meetings, and only in that sense. But of course, I regret very much that I didn't have the courage to get up and speak, and perhaps it's just as well, because I wasn't very well founded in many of my views, you know. As a matter of fact, my education didn't begin until about 30 years ago, so I'm not awfully proud of the fact that I overlooked so much of the necessary education one needs politically.
Well, when you finished with that school in Massachusetts, you then went back to New York?
I went back to New York, and then the following fall, I went to Oberlin, Ohio, to the college there.
And you were there?
It's because they had an academy and a college. And I was there 1 year. Then when I came back to New York, I tried to finish my high school. I went to one of the high schools there. And you know, I couldn't stand the kids. They were not just merely too young, they were too immature for me. I was studying with adults, you might say. I was perhaps the youngest in the class, but I still studied with adults, and they had a different way of thinking, and I was taught to learn to think in that manner. and actually the high school education is seemed very immature to me.
Now, this same millionaire paid for that year at Oberlin?
That what?
This same millionaire paid for that year at Oberlin,
yes,
for you.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. It paid my tuition and books and so on, but I had to work for my room and board. And I couldn't do that very long. I was too little. And there was much more work, you know. I think I had to work 4 hours a day, which must have been too many hours for my size of my body. And also, I wasn't a muscular person. I didn't develop strong muscles, so I could work that long. You know, after attending classes for all day long, it's pretty tough to go home and start doing housework. And there were shelves I had to dust, you know, and I'd get on a chair, but most of the time I couldn't see the top of the shelf, you know. So I didn't work there very long, I think several months, and then I had to go. And after that, I was given so much a week for my expenses, so much a month for my expenses.
Now, why did you stop going there after that 1 year?
You just didn't
pay anymore?
I don't remember. I went back to New York. New York kept drawing me, mm-hmm. you know. I had my friends there. And then shortly after, I went down to Washington. It wasn't very long after my Oberlin thing. I went to work. I got a job with, what is that magazine, the Smart Set magazine, you know, run by Harris. What's his first name? Frank Harris, you know. And then I got other jobs. And
what,
then a
what
job,
kind of job
came
was
up.
That?
And
that was an office job?
An office job. Because I didn't train myself for anything. Oh yes, when I came back, I think I went to a commercial school and learned some bookkeeping and some stenography and typing. I didn't complete it, but I had 1 year of it, which equipped me for typing and for shorthand and some bookkeeping. And then shortly after that, the European War brought on a great deal of employment and affluence in this country, and you just could get a job any place. And I was offered a job in Brunswick, New Jersey, so I went down there. I don't know how long I was there, and the work was awfully heavy for me. I had to use one of those wide typewriters, and you know, I'm shifting, you know, I didn't have the muscular strength, you know, to work on such a huge typewriter. But I don't remember how long I was there. And I went back to New York, and that was about the time that I met Catherine Hodgins from Everett at the Socialist Party. She must have been there as a delegate to a convention.
Now, let me ask,
I mean, that early part of my life is, in a sense, kind of amorphous, you know. It's just...
You, except for that job in New Jersey, you were living, when you were in New York, you'd go live with your mother.
Yes.
Still. But in New Jersey, do you remember, were you living in a rooming house?
I bought it someplace, mm-hmm. in a rooming house. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, before...
There were many girls from New York and New Jersey, you know, who mm-hmm. got this... I'm trying to think of the company's name, but I can't remember. But it was a defense industry.
I see. Yeah. How did you feel about the First World War? You weren't opposed to
the First World War? Opposed to it. Of course, I've been opposed to all the wars, you know. And you know, when you're young, you're looking for thrills of all kinds. And I was in a kind of a situation where there were quite a few of them, you know. Going around with a radical group and getting all kinds of ideas of how to destroy capitalism, you know. But we didn't do anything illegal, really. You know. It was just a lot of talk, mostly.
Well, I wanted to, before we talked about your going down to Washington, I wanted to find out more about your involvement with other radicals in New York.
But the involvement was general. I wasn't a member of anything. I didn't join anything organizationally. But I knew a lot of different types of radicals, IWWs and socialists mainly. Some anarchists, but I don't remember anarchism to any important degree.
Because you mentioned before knowing Hippolyte Havel.
Oh yes, yeah.
He was still an anarchist then, wasn't he?
Yes, he was an anarchist. That's right. I guess the only anarchist I knew were the big ones.
And
of course I went. I did in 1916. I went to Provincetown. And I think that's where I met Hippolyte. No, I knew Hippolyte in New York City. I met him before then. But it's so many years ago, and it didn't seem important to me to remember dates and figures. There was a continual meshing of dates, you know.
The dates aren't that important.
Yeah. But I met Hippolyte in New York before I went to Provincetown. And I went to Provincetown with the Zorak family. Did you ever hear of them? The Zorak, he was a sculptor and she was a painter. And he was with the New York School of Social Research. I think they had an art department. He was there until he died, not long ago, just 2-3 years ago.
And you went just as a friend? Of theirs?
Well, I met them. They wanted somebody to go along and look after their young boy. He was about a year and a half at that time, a year and a half. And I stayed there. I don't know whether I was in Provincetown the whole summer. I was there at least 2 months. And I stayed there about a month, and then I got a room. I left them. Got a room and met the people who were there, and how I met them I don't know, perhaps through the Zoraks, you know. But I told you the story already about meeting Eugene O'Neill and Terry Carlin and introducing Eugene to this group of people there, and how I was offered to play a part in Louise Bryant's one of her one-act plays and turned it down because I wanted Eugene O'Neill. And I couldn't act worth a darn. But, you know, I chose the biggest role that there was, the most difficult. You know, you had to be a professional actress to play.
So your associations were with an occasional anarchist like Hippolyte Havel.
Yeah.
Did you know Berkman and Goldman?
Well, I met both Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman, and I know I received a letter from Berkman while I was in jail in Washington, Virginia, but I didn't know him well. I just met them occasionally. I used to go. I remember now that I met them through their anarchist group. I used to go to their affairs and sometimes the forums, and I met a number of people there. You see, I traveled around to all of these various groups. Now, I don't remember going to the IWW headquarters. I did go to the Socialist Party headquarters and had a very strong views against those fellows who registered for the draft, very strong, and had a great admiration for 2 or 3 who refused to register and spent the years in Leavenworth, you know, prison. Evidently, Leavenworth has been the one federal prison that was used for conscientious objectors in this country.
I think that's where Berkman served his second term.
He did.
Atlanta. He and Ammon Hennessy were both at Atlanta.
Who?
Ammon Hennessy. The Catholic worker?
No, I didn't know him. Not that I know of. I might have met him, but I do not recall him. From the Catholic worker paper, you mean?
Yeah.
The only one I know there is
Dorothy Day.
But I know her through the Liberator. That preceded the masses.
Mm-hmm. Well, in all of these groups, so you were sort of in and out.
Just in and out. Yeah. I was a general radical. I was a general radical with not much education and not much knowledge, but I have a very fertile mind. So I worked out my idea of an ideal society. And it was very funny that I was much more logical than I realized, because when I finally joined the Socialist Workers' Party, a great many ideas in it I had already accepted, I already knew, I had already worked out in my mind, but I didn't know history. And I tell you, it's pitiful when you don't know history. You listen to people, and they're giving you a lot of historical material, and you have no basis on which to judge it. You have no knowledge of it. So that was one of the pitiful parts of my life that I've always regretted, because I had to study. I had to learn so much since then. So I joined the Socialist Workers' Party in 1940. That's about 33 years ago.
Now, during this sort of flowing in and out of the radical activities before you went to Washington, do you remember, was there much talk or thought about women in the radical movement?
Well, evidently there was, because how would I have thought of going down to Washington if I didn't have ideas about repression of women in many fields of political life, public life, and also the repression of women as thinking creatures. That was my first objection, because I thought women were very capable of thinking and very capable of organizing and very capable of all kinds of political activities, and political knowledge. After all, I met a lot of women and I listened to them. But quite aside from that, I had a strong feminist viewpoint virtually my whole life. I mean, I used to argue about them with various people over the years, but the only time that I ever joined anything is when I joined the Suffrage Party in Washington.
Do you remember any of the activities around the birth control fight, like when Emma Goldman was arrested for giving out birth control?
Well, vaguely.
You don't remember, you weren't involved in
it? I wasn't involved in it, no, I wasn't. I was, I just don't remember that until I went to Seattle, Washington. Mm-hmm. When I went to Seattle, Washington, I could have got so many years in jail for writing a letter on birth control and not mailing it. And the officer read it. And you know how I kept him from knowing what he was reading? I talked. I talked the entire time that he was reading that letter, and he never made one single sense out of it. He just folded it up and put it back in the drawer.
So in this earlier time, though, you don't remember consciously being aware of discussion in the radical movement about women, though. You just feel it was there somewhere to have influence.
It was, I accepted it tacitly. Looking back on it, I don't recall any specific instance, but since I was traveling around with two or three girls, we were all feminists. And we all believed that women were just as capable as men, given the opportunity or permitted to develop the potentialities. And it just never occurred to us that women weren't any less capable than men. But of course, for my whole life, I've had the attitude that men themselves weren't very capable, and that the average person is simply is too busy trying to earn a living to find out if they had any talents or to develop other arts besides working for a living, or to develop other types of work besides whatever they were doing. This was a part of the whole philosophy that we carried, and I can't separate one from the other, and remember distinctly any special struggle that we fought, you know.
Do you remember using, at that period of time, using the word feminist to describe yourself?
No. No, I don't think that we use that word. I don't know what we used. I don't know how old is the word feminist, do you know?
Well, it was used early, but a lot of women who were involved in radicalism didn't use it to describe their
position. Because, you see, they allied themselves with men.
Yeah.
I mean, that this was a total struggle, regardless of sex.
At that point, this is still before you went to Washington, did you have any ideas about marriage and children and sex? Did you have any?
Oh, I have ideas. I had ideas about sex and marriage, but I don't think I was thinking about children for myself.
What were your ideas at that time?
Well, as I said, the ideas were all meshed together. Mm-hmm. I can't remember any specific instance about children. I know I had an interest in sex and in marriage, and that's all I remember.
Mm-hmm. Did you believe in the institution of marriage then at that point?
Oh, I imagine that I didn't, you know. I don't think that that legal... I think that I even had an objection to it. At that time, they were talking about married... you know, women who married were illegal prostitutes. You know. There was a great deal of that kind of talk, so I accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
Without going deeply into it, you know. But, however, I really had feminist views my whole life. I mean, I notice areas of repression, you know,
mm-hmm.
against women and discrimination. I notice that constantly. And I don't know of any field that I can touch where it didn't exist. So that really my whole attitude was a total attitude of discrimination. Whenever I'd hear of something new that I hadn't thought of before, I accepted it.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps I accepted it too quickly and too glibly.
Mm-hmm.
But my views haven't changed about it, so that I think I was correct in accepting them.
Do you
still want just my philosophy now, my early philosophy.
Now, we're gonna start shifting to the suffrage story. And I want to ask you a few more questions about New York, so before you went, do you recall those earlier suffrage parades in New York? Like in 1915, there was a big parade. Do you recall any of those suffrage parades?
Well, I walked in a couple of them. And I know that I walked in one of them before I went down to Washington, and walked in another one after I went down to Washington. And that's all I remember,
mm-hmm.
just
no,
walking in them.
What I wasn't sure about from before was if was the very first thing with suffrage, or if you had been in the parade and had some other suffrage exposure.
I know that my friend and I walked in that earlier parade.
About
1950, whenever it was. Before I went down to Washington. And then I walked in the next parade, but my friend wasn't there any longer, and she was opposed to what the suffragettes were doing in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
She was opposed to direct action, which surprised me very much. You know?
Well, the next parade was after you had been in jail and everything.
Yes, after I'd been in jail.
So the first one...
I don't remember what year it was, but it couldn't have been much longer. Perhaps they were both prior to my jail experience.
Well, there was one in 1915 from Washington Square. It started at...
Yeah.
And...
It went up Fifth Avenue.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And there was... Inez Mulholland led it on a white horse. Do you recall that at all?
No, I don't.
Now, except for your friend, besides your friend.
How about the next one? When did the next one take place?
Well, there were lots of them. The two really big ones were, I think, the one in 1912, and then this one in 1915. And then there was, of course, one in Washington itself also.
Yeah.
There were several.
Well, it must be the 1915 one that I thought I marched in two of them.
Mm-hmm. But the latest
that I could have marched was in 1918, early part of 1918, because I left New York then and went to Everett, Washington that year.
So you did. This friend of yours who was also involved in radical stuff marched with you. You remember?
Well, she marched in one of them with me, but not in the other.
Now, did your other political associates remember going to that
I don't parade? Remember. There must have been a group of us who went to this parade and marched in it. Mm-hmm. A group of my girlfriends.
Mm-hmm. They were all involved in radical.
We were going to publish a monthly magazine, type so many copies. how we ever planned it was very comical, We were going to type so many copies and give them around. And I was the only one that was writing. So what material did we have? They thought I had a lot of talent. I was surprised.
Now, but how you got involved in the suffrage thing then was that you went to a socialist meeting.
I went to the Socialist Party to help them out with mailing. I often did that. I used to go quite often. And this time, I met this woman, Catherine Hodgins, from Everett, Washington, who became interested in me. How the conversation started, I don't know, but she told me what the suffrage party was doing in Washington, and she asked if I would like to go.
About how old was she? Like in her 50s at that time?
How old was she? Mm-hmm. Oh, about 30, I imagine. Mm-hmm. And I had just reached 21. Mm-hmm. So the first thing she asked me how old I was, and I told her. And then she told me about this group, and would I be interested? She told me how they were conducting the picket lines and so on, and I might go to jail. Well, I've never been to jail. It was kind of romantic in my mind, so I thought that would be a very thrilling experience. I was both serious and light-headed, not hearted, but just light-headed about it.
Had she herself been involved in the picketing, or she?
She didn't go. She was going back to Everett. The convention generally lasts about 3 days, so she was actually at the end of it and was returning, and she couldn't stay, because to stay meant not only to picket several days, but you'll finally get arrested, and then you might have to appear at the trial, and then you have to grit your teeth and take the sentence. She couldn't stay. She was married and had a responsibility back home.
Now, among the socialists, was she unusual in her interest in the suffrage thing?
She was only unusual in the sense that she was the only one that spoke to me about it at the time. Mm-hmm. They were doing all this picketing in Washington. It was during the height of their picketing, and I don't know how I got there. I might have contacted some suffragettes in New York, but my fare was paid down to Washington, and I was met at the station and taken to the headquarters, and the headquarters was the Little White House. You've heard of the Little White House, haven't you? That's where President McKinley died, and I was given his room and his bed. And after that, I wanted to get out of that room. I didn't want to sleep in anybody's deathbed. Of course, he was only killed, He didn't die of a disease.
Now, was this the National Women's Party house then?
Yeah.
The one on Lafayette Square there?
In Washington?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it is, but I don't know. It was really kitty corner from the main White House. Mm-hmm.